It is Locked On Jazz for the 4th of September, a number that makes me rethink everything involving Donovan Mitchell and gets me excited for the season. Plus, Britton Johnson stops by for day 2 of the summer interview series. We talk about Mike Conley's new world and then the life stories of Bojan Bogdanovic and Emmanuel Mudiay. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it a lot more fun to be a Jazz fan every single day. Thanks so much. We're into September. The players are coming into town here shortly for their kind of open gyms, and everyone's getting ready. We're getting close, believe it or not. College football's dominating your thoughts, I know, but we are getting awfully close to the season. The coaches are working hard. They're having seminars and sessions and days together and retreats and all sorts of stuff and figuring out how they're going to use their talent and all they're going to do. I want to dig in. I'll dig in a little bit more later in the week, probably tomorrow, on how I think I would use Bojan Bogdanovic, and I get into it a little bit with Britton today, so I'll dig into it a little bit more tomorrow. But today I want to give you a statistical number that I discovered yesterday that blew my mind. First, I want to thank Brandon Daly, who said he's been a diehard Jazz fan for 25 years. I read every article, I watch every game and all the following days, etc., and the informational intake, and yet David Locke introduces new topics and perspective relating to Jazz each time I listen. So thank you very much for that 5-star review. Also, thank you to Jazz Fan 12,000. Appreciate that. And to Kason Pearl for the same 5-star review. All right, we have a new goal, by the way. We have 948 reviews. 23 of them are for 1-star. But let's see if we can get to 1,000 reviews on iTunes. That'd be kind of cool. I mean, just having 1,000 listeners blows my mind. 1,000 reviews on iTunes would be amazing. All right, here's the number. This is stunning to me. Donovan Mitchell last year threw 141 passes to Jay Crowder for shots. Okay? He threw 93 passes to Joe Ingles for shots. Ricky Rubio, he threw 91 of only 79 to Rudy Gobert, 78 to Royce O'Neal, and 77 to Kyle Korver. There are a few numbers here that are stunning. Okay, one of them is that Donovan Mitchell only threw 79 passes to Rudy Gobert all season long. And you can look at this in one of two manners. You can say, oh my gosh, Donovan Mitchell never gets the ball to Rudy Gobert. Or you can say, wow, no one ever lets Donovan Mitchell get the ball to Rudy Gobert. And that's why Donovan Mitchell took the second most amount of floaters of anyone in the NBA. And there's probably a little bit of truth to both. So Pascal Siakam took the most amount of shots of any player in the league inside the mid in the paint, non-restricted, and Donovan took the second most, and I have hammered that all offseason about that Donovan's got to take less of those floaters. It's such an inefficient shot. And then you dig in and see this number, and you're like, well, okay, wait a sec. Now, either one of two things, and this is not the number that blew my mind, by the way, but this is the context of that number. So when he got it to Rudy Gobert, Rudy shot 76%, and he got, 60 shots on 79 passes, or he went 60 of 79 on those passes, but it's only one a game. So only once a game did Donovan come off the pick and roll and find Gobert. And I would say there's probably some element where he's got to do that more. Ricky Rubio found Rudy Gobert 153 times. Okay, so Donovan probably needs to improve. But let's also assume for a second that the reason Donovan Mitchell did not find him, Rudy Gobert, is because of the fact that teams were breaking down defensively at such a level and leaving guys that they brought a third guy over to Rudy Gobert or a third guy over to Donovan, and Donovan couldn't find him. So Donovan threw 141 passes to Jay Crowder last year for shots. The QSQ, quantified shot quality, which means the likelihood of a shot going in if an average player took that shot. The QSQ on those shots for Jay Crowder was 57% effective field goal percentage. So Donovan drove, kicked it to Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder got 141 looks, twice a game, from Donovan Mitchell. And his effective field goal percentage, if he was an average shooter, was 57%. And Jay Crowder shot 46%. Did you hear that correctly? The average shooter in the NBA would have shot 57%, and Jay Crowder shot 46. 11 percentage points below an average shooter. Donovan Mitchell threw 91 passes to Ricky Rubio for shots last year. The average player in the NBA on those shot attempts would have shot 56% effective field goal percentage. 56, an average player on the shots from Donovan Mitchell to Ricky Rubio. These are open looks. The league average effective field goal percentage is not 56, it's lower. And Ricky Rubio's getting this pass from Donovan Mitchell 91 times throughout the year. He got a pass that led to a shot from Donovan Mitchell, and he made 27 of them for an effective field goal percentage of 39.6 or 17 percentage points below what the average shooter would have made with those shots. Oh my gosh. I didn't know these things. Thank goodness I didn't know these things while calling games last year. Donovan Mitchell threw 47 passes to Derek Favors because Favors was left wide open, unguarded in the corner because Derek Favors' man came and double-teamed Donovan Mitchell or didn't let him get the ball to Ricky Rubio for shots that an average player would have hit 62% effective field goal percentage. And Derek Favors hit 48%. So when Donovan Mitchell threw passes to Jay Crowder performed 11 percentage points below the average player in the NBA. Ricky Rubio performed 17 percentage points below the average player in the NBA. And Derek Favors was 14 percentage points below the average player in the NBA. Those numbers are stunning. Well, maybe it's Donovan's fault. Maybe Donovan throws the pass too hard or they're bad passes or only bails them out to guys who aren't any good. Joe Ingles shot 4 percentage points better than expected. Royce O'Neal shot 2 percentage points below what was expected. Kyle Korver shot 9 percentage points above what was expected. Tabo Sefolosha shot 2 points above what was expected. So there goes that idea. I mean, if we believe that like parenting is that if a kid does something wrong and they get disciplined, that they won't do it again because they had a bad experience, then maybe the reason Donovan Mitchell threw up so many floaters is because every time he passed to Jay Crowder, Ricky Rubio, and in this case, Derek Favors, they missed. The Ricky Rubio 39.6% effective field goal percentage number is stunning. Other than when Derek Favors passed to Jay Crowder last year, he shot 38% effective field goal percentage. 39.6% effective field goal percentage? Effective field goal percentage weighs 3-point shots, right? So for 3-point percentage, that's 13%. For 2-point shots, that's 20%. No, excuse me, that's not right. I did that wrong. It's not that bad. For 2-point shots, it's exactly the number it says, 39.6. For 3-point shots, it's about 25% or so. Sorry, got a little carried away. 39.6% effective field goal percentage. So maybe the reason that Donovan Mitchell took a million floaters is because he was getting the equivalent of a child getting spanked. I know we don't do that anymore. Every single time he threw a pass to one of these other guys. And now those passes are going to Mike Conley, Bojan Bogdanović, and Mike and Jeff Green. All right. Well, now we got a different game going on. Right? Because Bogdanovich and Conley and Jeff Green's not great. Like, let's not, I'm not trying to oversell this. But, because let's just be honest. So Bojan Bogdanovich last year shot 5 percentage points better than expected shot value. 5. 56.8. Mike Conley last year from Memphis shot 1.3 points better effective field goal percentage than expected. Okay, just right on average. That would be fine. And Jeff Green shot 3 points better than expected. So all three of these guys last year shot better effective field goal percentage than what was anticipated from them. And these other guys, unfortunately for the Jazz last year, had just these incredibly poor shooting seasons and are bad shooters. For the season, Ricky Rubio was 6 points below average and Jay Crowder was 5. On passes from Donovan Mitchell, they were far worse. It's a pretty incredible number, and it makes you wonder what Donovan might be able to do. That's the number that blew my mind. Britton Johnson, we'll talk about Mike Conley's new world. Mike Conley's never played with any wing players. We'll get into that here in just one moment. By the way, Mack Weldon is sponsoring all of our NFL coverage this week. We want to thank them for that. I just got my new silver Mack Weldon shirt. Loved it. Go to MackWeldon.com, promo code locked on. I need your help on something, you guys. My guy, Jeff, from the store. He owns the store. He owns all three of them, the 6200 South and 20th East, the new one at the Gateway, is under a belief that the Royale cookie is better than the Mudslide cookie. And he keeps telling me about all these taste tests he does. And frankly, he's lying to me. He's cooking the books, he's fabricating numbers, and he's making it seem like my Mudslide cookie is not the most popular cookie in town. So I need you to go to the store at 600 South 20th East, or at the Gateway store, and just keep buying the Mudslide cookie, and then we'll keep bugging about how sold out it is, and I'll send in pictures like yesterday when I got there, and there was no left. There were none left. They're that popular. They had sold out. It was late. It was 6 o'clock. Not their fault. They were gone. Because the Mudslide cookie is the greatest cookie ever. And there were Royale cookies left. So my sample size says, one sold out, the other's not. Clearly, my cookie way better. All right, 6200 South, 20th East, the store. The new one right down at 900 South and 1st West in the Gateway store is great. It feels like a very urban downtown grocery store. Felt a little bit like I was in like one of those New York City stores. They've done a great job in the space. Super stuff there. Abigail's Bread is another local company they just got. I absolutely love it. I had the cinnamon toast this morning, cinnamon sourdough toast, and thought that was great. My wife wanted the Clifford Farm eggs yesterday, so we had to go pick those things up for her. She said the prices on that is way better than where she picks up some of the other eggs she gets, so that's I had to stop by and get those. Stop by the Gateway, 6200 South, 20th East, and 9th South and 100 West. It is the store. Day two with Britton Johnson. You'll hear him all season long on the pregame, halftime, and postgame show on radio. Britton, I'm going to give you a list of names here for a second. Okay.
Okay.
Avery Bradley, Garrett Temple. Okay. Those are just incredible basketball names for you right there. Tony Allen, James Ennis. Incredible, incredible basketball name. I'll continue while we're at it. Courtney Lee, Tony Allen, Jordan Farmar. Pretty soon, you're going to have to tell me what all these people have in common. Courtney Lee, Tony Allen, yep. Tayshaun Prince, Beno Udre. Do you know what all these players have in common?
Defense.
No, that's good. That is true.
That's the first thing that came to my mind.
Okay, that's good.
Tayshaun Prince is that wingspan.
They are the former backcourt mates to Mike Conley.
Oh, okay.
Mike Conley best last time Mike Conley played with a decent offensive backcourt mate was 2012-2013 when he played with Rudy Gay for 42 games and Rudy Gay shot 40% from the field, which would debate whether he actually was any good or not. But that team won 56 games after Rudy Gay left. But prior to Rudy Gay and OJ Mayo, since the 2011-2012 season, the previous names are the wing players, and Chandler Parsons was in there, who played with Mike Conley. What are Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles, Bojan Bogdanovic going to do for Mike Conley?
Man, wow. This I love this. I think that when I hear about players coming to Jazz, I get excited, first of all. Well, I don't know. Maybe first of all, second of all, whatever. We'll just say I'm going to give you a couple of things I get excited about. First thing, I love the fact that they get to come in and be coached up by Quinn Snyder, by Alex, by Johnny, by developers, people that develop and have a passion for developing. I mean, I played, you know, the few moments I got to play in the NBA, David, I remember an assistant coach taking me to the gym when I came from the D League to the Magic, and I won't name his name, and him saying to me, okay, now coach ain't coming to the gym, so let's just get this bleep over with. And I'm at the time I was young and I had no idea just how, looking back, I mean, if that was my son, or, you know, I mean, I'm mad for myself right now that guy didn't do the stories I've heard Alex Jensen doing for Rudy Gobert or Johnny Bryant for the guards of the Jazz, you know, Coach Lang. And anyway, I'm excited for him to come in, Mike Conley to come in and play for Quinn Snyder and this team. But I think my enthusiasm goes through the roof thinking about him playing with Donovan Mitchell, and especially with what you just told me, because I was kind of aware of that, but not to the degree you are. I think that this is going to be incredible. I mean, look, when a player comes to a new franchise and gets a breath of fresh air, like Mike's going to get for the Jazz, mindsets change. Yes, his mindset will change on how he views the game and what he's going to do because of Quinn's teaching and whatnot. But not just that, but your team's circumstances change. And if you want to talk about circumstance change, this is maybe one of the best examples I can think of. You know, for a guy to come in and be able to have a Donovan Mitchell, a rising star, but a great teammate, a guy that's going to be okay if you probably take too many shots, or he's going to have your back no matter what. I don't know that I can always say that about some of these other players we talk about. I don't know if James Harden has his teammates back like he might claim to. We've watched Donovan Mitchell's genuine personality, not just on the cameras. You've seen it up close and up close and personal, David, but you know, throughout his social media, through his relationships in out in the community, I think Mike Conley is going to benefit just enormously, not just on the court, but just being around this guy, being around another superstar. And you know, we're here to talk about on the court, so let's get on the court. On the court, Mike Conley is going to have just a lot of space, and that's what we talk about with Donovan, a lot of space because of the respect that players are going to have with Bogdanovic, with Joe Ingles, with Donovan Mitchell. And my heck, that little teardrop lob to Rudy, that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I've even watched Emmanuel Mudiay do that teardrop pass, and I don't know where we're going to go with him, if we're going to talk about him or not. I've even watched Emmanuel Mudiay make a few nice teardrop passes for the Knicks when he was playing with DeAndre Jordan. So anyway, I'm excited to just see, and you just made me even more excited to just see what Mike Conley is going to be able to do with these new buddies of his.
It's pretty incredible when you start to look at it. So last year, Donovan Mitchell ranked 7th in the NBA. I don't know if this is going to make sense, but tell me if it doesn't, because I have this number. I haven't figured out how to say it yet. So Donovan Mitchell used 44% of his possessions came out of the pick and roll. Like when he actually got a shot, 44, yep. Only Dame Lillard, Trae Young, Kemba Walker, D'Angelo Russell, Chris Dunn, and Lou Williams got more of their offense out of the pick and roll. Mike Conley was like right behind him at 42%. So both of these guys got almost all of their action off of pick and roll action. And now both these guys are finally going to get action off maybe a spot up or a drive because they got it on the weak side, or somebody else started with an advantage and now they get it. Like, when you're over, the guys that are getting their offense over 40% of the time are the primary ball handlers in the NBA. D'Angelo Russell, Kemba, Trae Young, Dame Lillard, Derrick Rose, De'Aaron Fox, Zach LaVine, Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell. The minute you start to drop in, like LeBron last year was only 28% of his possessions came on pick and roll stuff. Like, you're actually, some of these guys are actually getting stuff off other people's action in a way that these two guys didn't get it in the past.
Right. No, I think it's going to be not only beneficial for these two players, but I mean, I go down and think about Joe Ingles. You know, and I think about him, you know, having to just be in that corner and be ready to catch and shoot, not having to play the two-man action as much as he did, you know, last year. Joe's getting older, obviously. Joe doesn't explode and play above the rim. He relies on craftiness. But, you know, we want old Joe, the Jazz, they want him as energetic as possible. If he's saving up energy, just spacing and kind of just keeping his player occupied, well, then he also gets to go down on the other end and be, I would say, that much more efficient on defense, which is where you want his legs as fresh as possible. I think this is going to influence the entire team. You know, and when Ed Davis or Bradley come in and play that pick and roll, maybe they won't be as efficient around the rim. Maybe they won't occupy a five man as much. But then, hey, that's where you've brought in these shooters to now be able to, you know, kick out to and have better percentages in that area.
Britton mentions Joe Ingles. We'll dig into Joe Ingles and that second unit he just alluded to as we continue here on the summer interview series with Britton Johnson. By the way, DraftKings.com is available for you with the NFL season coming up. Go to DraftKings.com now and use the promo code LOCKEDON. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Have you seen the new Palisade Hyundai? They have gone all out. The Palisade Hyundai is the hottest selling, one of the hottest selling cars on the market. It's an 8-seater, and the Linden store is actually selling it faster than any store anywhere in the country. So if you want to go check it out at the Murray store at 4646 South State Street or up in Logan, you probably should do so, and you might want to put in a reservation to get one. They are getting amazing reviews. It's the 2020. Its sticker price starts at about $31,500 for an 8-seat car. It's got every bell, every whistle. We bought the Santa Fe a few years ago for my son. Well, for the house, but my son drives it because it had all the bells and whistles and safeties. Those are all now standard. Every single one of the bells and whistles and things that I wanted on my Santa Fe is now standard on the new Palisade. The Santa Fes are still available. They're the bigger SUV with two rows of seats instead of getting that third row. There's the Tucson that comes down a size, and then there's the Zippy Fun Kona. They're all available at 4646 South State Street, also in Logan and in Linden. If you're shopping for a car right now, at least check out what you can get for your dollar at Hyundai. You can then decide if that's the right car for you, but you should really check out and see all the things you can get. It's hard to match the value you can get from Hyundai and any other price. The all-new 8-passenger Palisade is taking the world by storm. So check, well, the world, okay, the car world by storm. Check it out, 4646 South State Street, also in Logan and in Linden. It's Murdoch Hyundai. You brought up the role of Joe Ingles. There's been debate of whether he starts or comes off the bench. I have my opinion on it. I think the more interesting thing is, what's the second unit? The second unit was Joe Ingles and Derek Favors running that pick and roll. What do you think the second unit is this year?
I think time will have to kind of, I don't know if it's necessarily time will tell. I'm actually really curious to see that Dante Exum, Emmanuel Mudiay battle. Do we get to watch a backup quarterback battle like we've never seen before? I mean, those two are players. I saw a tweet by you the other day about their first year and something about first year players. I can't necessarily quote it or remember. I don't have Twitter up right now.
It was a Kevin Pelton geek tweet about how long someone's draft status still has value, and basically both Emmanuel Mudiay and Dante Exum have crossed over the line. And now have to, basically, it says you shouldn't evaluate them as fifth and ninth picks anymore. You should evaluate them for what they've done in their career, which is actually a bad sign for both of them, right? Like Dante's a 40% shooter and a 30% three-point shooter offensively and a brilliant defensive player. And Emmanuel Mudiay has not shown that defense, is in a 39 and 32% shooter. So to some extent, both these guys are not only playing for position and time, but trying to prove at 20, both of them, I think at 22, 23 years old, so still crazy young, trying to prove their value in this league. It's a fascinating thing. I actually believe that, and Dante had an interesting interview out of Australia recently where I think he basically said, hey, I'd like to be a point guard, but I'd rather be on the floor. And it led me to feel like he's talked to Quinn. And that Quinn has kind of gotten to him and said, all right, you're 24 years old. We got to get you playing and stop worrying about being a point guard. I actually like Dante as a wing player. I use the analogy of Trevor Ariza when he was in his Laker days. Eric Woodyard dispelled that in the last interview. But I think let Mudiay play on the ball a little bit. Let Dante play off the ball and see if those two guys can create some energy in that second unit.
Absolutely. By the way, Emmanuel Mudiay's life story, I mean, there's some content for you, David. That's something that you could spend 2 hours doing a show on. I can't remember if it was Jake Scott and I talked about that last year, but he has quite an incredible story of some sad moments and just endearing moments, family moments, triumph, survival. It's fascinating.
For those who don't know it, Emmanuel Mudiay is caught in the Kongan Civil War, I believe it was.
Yep.
His dad drops dead at a family barbecue when I think Mudiay is 2 or 3. His mom, the Civil War gets so bad that his mom's sister lives in Fort Worth, and his mom flees the Congo. How? I have no idea. Gets to Fort Worth, Texas, starts their new life there, and Mudiay and his brother at this point are kind of bouncing around to places and people just trying to survive, wondering if they're ever going to see their mom again, wondering if they're ever going to live. And they get to the they end up getting back to the U.S., seeing their mom again. They live in pretty severe poverty in Fort Worth, Texas. He gets screwed by going to the Prime Prep Academy, which is Deion Sanders' place. He actually loses his entire high school eligibility for his junior and senior year. Goes to China to play, only plays 12 games, and then after that, the Mavericks throw him out there and start him for 66 games, and he's terrible. And then they start him for 41 games, and next year, and he's terrible. And you wonder just whether he's not maybe as good as people had hoped, or whether he just got such a terrible place to start and such a terrible route to start in the league that there is untapped potential inside of him.
Man, yeah, you nailed it on the head right there. I hope fans here can hope the same for him, that Salt Lake becomes a nice resting place for him to just work on his game without distractions. And I'm not saying this kid's had distractions in his life. This young basketball player and this young human has had a life story that I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it was when I was reading about what he has gone through, it was tear jerking. But you know, you think about just having him come out and be successful in a basketball uniform with everything that's gone on in his life. I mean, David, I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah, with a pleasant mother and father telling me to, hey, make sure you get good grades and, you know, enjoy walking to school. And I went to University of Utah. I'm like, wow, it's incredible to think of the different life where I wanted to make it to NBA, just like, you know, this kid made it to NBA. Astronomically different, you know, two different lives. But anyway, he's one that I'm going to keep my eye on and hope that things go well for.
The other one that's really interesting is that Bogdanović grows up in Yugoslavia. He was born in 89 to 99, the Kosovo War. And the Bosnian War is 92 to 95. And he gets, and then he eventually gets out in 2004 at 15 years old to go. Actually, I think at 2005 he goes to signs with Real Madrid at 15 or 16 years old, and that's how he gets out of Yugoslavia. So, really, an interesting kind of very different world, very different side note. He's now the all-time highest-paid Croatian athlete in the history of the country. But you know, an interesting kind of side note for him. And the story on him, I haven't met him yet or not, but is supposedly incredibly quiet. Like, very much to himself, very, very quiet. And you just, you know, you wonder, like, what is the impact on these kids of growing up in these various environments that they grew up in?
You know what's interesting, Dave? I played in Greece for 3 years and had several teammates from Croatia and Serbia and learned a lot about those 90s you were talking about during the Clinton administration. And I won't get political here, but just talking, you know, a little about how we got involved and the way that we supported some of the former Yugoslavia, some of those countries there. But I'll remember this one time. We had two teammates over at our apartment, my wife and I, and they brought their girlfriends over and we were, you know, making them dinner. And next thing you know, we kind of started talking about things that have happened to our country in 9/11. And then they started talking about things that happened in Serbia that were influenced by the United States, some things that we did. And next thing you know, they started telling us, you know, and we were talking about how horrible the 9/11 was. Next thing you know, they were telling us your situation was nothing like ours, what we went through. And it got hairy. They know my wife's like, does anyone want dessert? Is everybody okay? And I just remember one of my teammates, finally, he just said, hey, listen, let's not do this. Let's calm down. Because I was so unprepared to even discuss why we did what we did back in those days to Serbia to support the countries and blah, blah, blah. And it just escalated so fast. But then, you know, we got to practice and the two guys came up to me, apologized. We became stronger teammates because of it. But I just remember there's some real stuff that these guys grow up with in that former Yugoslavia. And we've seen the documentaries, you know, with Vlade Divac and some of the things that he went through when they were all one at one point, and then they broke into Croatia, Serbia, you know, Bosnia and whatnot. But yeah, these guys, you wonder if that quietness, David, is because of things that they've seen that quiet little me in Murray, Utah, growing up life has never come close to seeing and they've seen in person, or is it a foreign country, or are they just shy? You don't know, but it's interesting and it's fun. I had some great opportunities because in Europe, you room with a teammate. And so you really get to know a lot of these guys. And you know me, I'm a talker. I like to run my mouth. So I got to know some incredible teammates over there and learn some stories that were heartbreaking again. And, but also just sort of fascinating to see the way people viewed us as well, in the United States as Americans. And, but I'm excited to have him on the team. Outside of all the interest of his life and what he's probably gone through, interesting, yes, I'm very interested to see what he's going to do with the basketball in his hands for the Jazz.
Well, we got there talking about the second unit, just to share with you. That's my thought. He proved last year that he, being Bojan Bogdanović, that he could lead a team. He carried Indiana after the Oladipo injury. You go look, his last 50 games of the year, he averages 20-plus points a game. I'm putting him in charge of Ingles last year, but Ed Davis is not a good pick-and-roll guy at this point. It has not been at this point in his career. You can't do the same things. Joe Ingles, if you actually look at Joe Ingles' particular numbers, when he was on the floor with Favors, they weren't good. We really negated who Joe was. I'm turning Bojan Bogdanović into that second unit guy. My first substitution, if I'm Quinn, I'm starting probably Ingles and Bogdanović, is Jeff Green, and then having Bojan come back pretty quickly with that second unit to be the primary scorer in that unit. I think that's what he really brings and proved last year in Indiana.
It's interesting because I'm looking at him right now on paper, and I for whatever reason, don't feel like he's 6'8". And I've stood next to him a few times down on the court. But 6'8", you know, in the NBA, you think now fours, Jeff Green, or not Jeff Green, but yeah, Jeff Green as well, but Draymond Green. And Draymond, I don't even know if Draymond's 6'8". Draymond's more of a 6'7", 6'6", in my opinion. But I think if you've got Rudy on the floor, or a Davis, you know, who's not going to necessarily be a great pick-and-roll player, but you've got four shooters and one Bogdanović who can play physical and not go out there and get beat up in a power forward position, which isn't the old power forward position, let's be honest. I think it's a great – I like it. I like what you're talking about there, having him – and maybe he does slide over and play some three-spot small forward. I don't know. I don't even really know what to think, David, anymore. What's funny about telling people he can slide to the three and the four, I'm kind of like – the game's changed so much. I don't know that means what it used to mean. You know what I mean? Because Draymond Green brings the ball up like a point guard.
Well, Draymond Green is their point guard. He also is their center on defense, right? I mean, that's where these coaches have actually gotten very, very creative. Bogdanovich, by the way, 22% of his offense last year came off screens, very Klay Thompson-esque. 12% of his offense came off pick and roll, which is a lot for a player like that. He was in the 86th percentile of efficiency as a pick and roll ball handler, so he can do a lot. Britton Johnson will be back with us for day 3 of the summer interview series. He's not off the hook yet. We'll continue to chat with him coming up. Long day at work, still stuck at the office? Open up the DoorDash app and choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are right now. Our listeners get $5 off their first order of $15 or more. Download the DoorDash app and enter the promo code Locked On. He's Britton Johnson. He'll be back with us tomorrow. This is Locked On Jazz, part of the summer interview series on the Locked On Podcast Network.